I'd like to begin today by reading a verse from the book of 2 Corinthians 12. And if you'll join me real quick, just two verses that I'd like to share with you. And I'm going to read them in the Message translation this morning. And I offer these to you as a point of reflection today. Your grace, God's grace, that is enough. It's all you need. My strength comes into its own in my weakness. Once I heard that, I was glad to just let it happen. I quit focusing on my handicap and began appreciating the gift. It was a case of Christ's strength moving in on my weakness. God's grace is enough. It's all we need. But have you ever thought to yourself, when given a tough situation in life and something happens and something changes, have you ever thought to yourself, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? I know some of you have thought that. Some of you have thought that about a lot of things in our world. Can't things just go back to the way they used to be? Think about that with your own life today. You ever made a mistake? Maybe hurt a friend and realize that the trust between you has been broken and you just wish to yourself, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? Remember that little girl that you used to swing over your shoulders and sing lullabies to and rode the carousel at the state fair like we did on Friday, and now she wants to date boys and wear makeup and Lord knows what else. And you think to yourself, gosh, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? You ever lost your cool? Maybe yelled at your spouse or a loved one with words that you probably wouldn't use around polite company and realize the next day that she or he won't even look at you. And you think to yourself, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? Someone steals your car right from underneath your nose in your own driveway. Someone mugs you on the street, steals your identity, putting thousands of dollars of purchases on your credit card, completely violating your sense of security. And you think to yourself, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? You've worked hard at a job for 10 or 20 years only to be laid off as if you had been hired yesterday. And you think to yourself, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? Someone close, a family member or a friend, moves away, leaving you lonely and empty. And you think to yourself, can't things just go back? Your dad, maybe, is becoming more and more verbally abusive and aggressive, and you go over to his house one day to confront him about it and discover bottles everywhere. Suddenly realizing that he has a problem with alcohol. And you think to yourself, can't things just go back to the way they used to be? Whatever it is in life, you want the current bad situation to go back to the good situation that it was before. You want the bad times to give way to the good times, but only on the pretense that the bad time never happened, right? We want this all the time in our lives. But here's the thing. Brokenness in our lives can be repressed, but it can't be erased. We have to deal with the brokenness that we find ourselves in. If we want freedom from what's broken in our lives, we have to embrace the wounds that we have. We have to embrace our brokenness. But that isn't what we're taught to do in our society, is it? Far from it. In fact, we're taught to buck up. Don't let it affect you. Overcome it. Pretend that it's not there. Because broken is weak and ugly and useless in our culture. We throw broken things away in the garbage. Our ideals are those based on Western societies, based on Greek and Hellenistic culture, which saw beauty in perfection. Things like symmetry, balance, proportion, clean lines. And all these ideas originated because the Greeks based their ideas of beauty on, guess what? The human body. Not just any human body, of course, right? The perfect human body. Those kinds of human bodies you see in those old Greek statues in museums. Bodies that are muscular and unblemished. So when you think, when you and I think about beautiful, we think through the same types of ideas. We think balance and proportion. We think clean and strong and whole and perfect. You get the idea, right? So that things that are unbalanced, that are asymmetrical, that are disproportional, things that are weak and broken, they're not beautiful to us. Other cultures, however, identify beauty differently. For example, Japanese culture defines beauty through the concept, or at least part of beauty, through a concept called wabi-sabi. Say that with me real quick. Wabi-sabi. Real simple. Wabi-sabi is about imperfection and asymmetry. It's about a certain rough quality of something and a modest quality to it. Wabi-sabi, along with other Japanese ideals and values, gave rise to an art form long ago called kintsugi. Kintsugi. Kintsugi is really two Japanese words put together, and they mean together gold and join. A golden joining together. It's a Japanese art form of repairing broken pottery with gold, thereby highlighting the cracks and the breaks in the pottery, making it more beautiful. Let me give you a couple examples. These are some pieces made through the Japanese art technique, kintsugi. You can tell each of these pieces has been broken in some way at some point in time. Some more than others. But artists took the broken pieces and put them back together using gold to fill in the cracks. Now, when the gold gets in those cracks, it doesn't hide the cracks, does it? We would want to get super glue out, right? And we want to be real careful and put that stuff together so you don't even see the crack, right? Because we think to ourselves, the crack is blemished and broken and weak, and we're going to throw that out. The Japanese say something different. The cracks are beautiful. So we highlight them with gold so that they stand out. Kintsugi finds beauty in the things that are incomplete and imperfect and asymmetrical. Things that are broken. It sees fractures and broken places not as an end to a perfectly good piece of pottery, but rather the fractures represent an essential moment in time in history where something changed about that piece. The piece was not complete because it was unblemished. In fact, the opposite is true. Its brokenness is a step on the journey of its life. So the flaws of its shape are not hidden, but rather they're emblazoned with gold. Kintsugi highlights the brokenness as a moment in time where change happened. It makes the cracks a key feature of the piece in a way that adds to the piece's overall beauty. Kintsugi reminds us that repair requires transformation. And that transformation is about accepting the flaws and the broken pieces of pottery, sure, but also of our lives. Kintsugi is about learning that the pristine and unblemished is actually less beautiful than the broken. And that's a novel concept in our world. Things aren't damaged or useless or ugly because they're broken, as our Western minds would see it, but rather the beauty is in the brokenness. Now, I don't know about you, but I've struggled a lot with brokenness in my life. And I think if we're all honest with ourselves, there are times when we all struggle with some type of brokenness in our life. When I first moved back to North Carolina, to Charlotte, with Joni and another couple who were good friends at the time to start a new ministry on the west side of Charlotte, North Carolina, I was viewed as the one of us that was unorganized and unplanned. Planning, organizing, they were not my skills. At least that's the way everyone saw me. They weren't my favorite things to do, so I'll be honest about that. I prefer to be flexible. to go with the flow, to let life happen and just take it as it comes. That was who I am. I still am that today. But I have been pretty successful in life up to this point without a whole lot of ultra organization or over planning. So not being good at those things wasn't a huge fault in my eyes, but boy, it was in the eyes of our friends. Now I say this and I want you to keep this in mind as well. I was the one of the four of us that kept down the full-time job. And I was a band director. A high school teacher in one of the nation's largest public school systems, Charlotte-Mecklenburg County Schools, were in the top 25 at that time. I don't know if they still are, but they were then. And within Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, I was in the largest high school in that district. In fact, when I was there, it was the largest high school in the state of North Carolina. I had to have lesson plans turned in ahead of time. I had competitions and football games to prepare students for. I had a booster organization that I had to organize and manage, and I had dozens of volunteers that I had to keep moving. We did a lot of fundraising with the band boosters. We did mostly concessions at the Carolina Panthers football games. We had a concession booth that we ran that was on the 50-yard line, home side, lower level. Got a lot of media folks there. Got a lot of well-to-do folks there. And I was accountable to a team of folks that organized that concession stand every week. Over a year and a half at that school, I tripled the size of the band program. I took a group of students who went to competitions the previous year in a low grade of music and received an average rating. I took them that year, my first year, in a higher difficulty of music and received not good, not excellent, but superior rating. The highest one you can get. You know how I did it? I encouraged kids. I helped them take steps to be better. I took every one of them, whether they were skilled or unskilled. In fact, I remember a little clarinet player named Kaz Mungin. He had never touched a clarinet in his life. He wanted to play. We don't typically take clarinet players in the ninth grade, but I said, come on, Kaz, I'll teach you. We sat after school one-on-one, and we practiced, and within 6 months, he was in my highest band. Didn't matter whether you were skilled or not skilled. I'd take you. I'd work with you. I taught those kids leadership classes after school for those who were section leaders or leaders in the marching band. I carefully and consistently built a team mentality in an organization that had been all about who was in charge and who had power, and less seniors treat these freshmen like they're garbage. Completely changed the culture within that group of students so that there was respect. Respect was fundamental to what I did with those students. We respected one another and we had fun together in everything that we did. I took a chaotic and unorganized band program, terrible band program to be honest with you, and I turned it around into a hardworking, disciplined, fun, and engaging group of young people who made music together at a high level. But at home, with my friends, whom I lived with, in what we called an intentional Christian community, folks who I had gone to seminary with, had moved to Charlotte with, I was viewed as unorganized and incapable of planning. You know how I felt? Flawed. Messed up. Drained. Empty. Useless. Unloved. Unaccepted. I felt broken. Because the people whom I lived with and cared about most didn't see who I was. A year later, despite loving the work that I did with those young people in that band, I wanted to throw myself away. And I did. Some challenges at the school that were going on at that time, cuts in funding, always hit the arts worst, and it was going to take an immense amount of time for me to begin to advocate for music education at a very basic level, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to do that if we were trying to get a nonprofit ministry off the ground on the west side of Charlotte. So it led me to leave the band program. We had determined that we really didn't need my full-time salary at that point. We were getting by okay on several part-time salaries, and so I left. I left the school in part because of those reasons, and also in part because of the battering that I took at home. I was being left out of things. I was getting constant reminders of my flaws, And all of that together was too much for me to bear. And so I left teaching. Knowing a potential ministry job lay in the future for me at a church that Joni was working at the time, I just decided to sit at home and wait until that job came open. It was on the horizon. And so I literally sat at home and threw myself away for months. I was stuck with me. And I'm not sure I really liked me at the time. I wanted to fight back against all those negative perceptions that I was getting from home. And I did, here and there, push back. But the truth was this. I began to see myself the same way that those folks I was living with saw me. I let their views of me become my views of me. And one day, it all hit the fan. Someone made a particularly passive-aggressive comment to me one morning while I was sitting on the couch drinking my coffee. She made this to me on her way out to work one morning. It was over something really silly and stupid, but it was more than I could bear. And I lost it. I was so tired of the negative comments about me being thrown in my face all the time, I started yelling. Stop trying to take the sawdust out of my eye while there is a plank in yours. And I yelled it over and over and over. You ever felt like that? You ever felt like that in your life when there's somebody or something or someone around you that is all the time pointing out your flaws, pointing out the cracks in your life, and you just can't take it anymore? And you snap because you need some relief. Some relief from those stones being thrown at you. You just want that person to accept you, to pay attention, more attention to their life than your life. For me, that was all summed up in those famous words from Jesus about sawdust and logs and our eyes. And as I was saying this, as I was yelling this over and over and over, I took that coffee mug that I was sitting on that couch with. I had been drinking from it. And I took it and I slammed it down on the ground as hard as I could. And it broke into 1,000 pieces. All over the floor, we had hardwood floors. It was green. It was a handmade coffee mug, and it had been given to us by some friends just after we moved to Charlotte to celebrate our coming to Charlotte, to live on the west side and to start this new ministry in Charlotte. And that mug represented exactly how I felt. How I felt about myself, how I felt about the community of people that I was living with that called ourselves Christians. That everything that was supposed to be good and saintly and perfect and whole about what we were doing there on the west side of Charlotte was really broken. We couldn't even care for one another. How could we care for anyone else? Most especially, that mug represented me, that I was broken. And when I think back to this time in my life now, there were some places in my life that told me I was okay. That I was valuable, that I was good. Those band parents, boy, they did it all the time. They built me up. The students that I was teaching, those kids. Now, teenagers do that kind of thing in their own way. Sometimes just several months after you've done something for them. But they always have a way, and they find a way to let you know they care eventually. My parents did that for me. I remember the day after I broke that mug and went on my yelling tirade, I ran home because I needed to be with somebody who loved me unconditionally. We had just learned about my dad's cancer during this part of my story, and so over the coming months, my dad and I would grow closer than we had ever been in our life. Because they loved me and they accepted me and they supported me no matter what, that's what mamas and daddies do, right? Folks from the neighborhood in Charlotte, they supported me and helped me know I was okay. But what really stands out the most to me today, as I was thinking about this story this week, and if I would be vulnerable enough to share it with you today, was a journal. It's a journal that Joni kept. A journal that she kept for me over the years. Every anniversary, from our first anniversary, Joni would pull out this journal, and she would write it. She would write about the year that we had been through. She would write about the trials, the joys, the triumphs, the lows and the highs of that particular year. She would write about how amazing I was to her. She would lift me up and remind me how loved I was and how good I was despite all that was happening around us. That journal, though I never really told Joni this at that time, I'm not sure I knew it and I'm not sure I could have said it if I did know it. That journal always reminded me that Joni was in my corner, no matter what happened. That she loved me even when I didn't love me. That she accepted me even when I felt like no one else in our house was accepting me. That journal was written in Joni's hands, and yet it was also written in God's hands. Because as I look back today, I know it was also God's voice speaking through her words, reminding me that I was loved and accepted and that God was also in my corner. That journal was God working through Joni to make some kintsugi art out of my life. Those words were the golden seams that joined the broken pieces of my life back together. Words that reminded me of what the psalmist says in Psalm 139. And you're welcome to read along with me. But I want to remind you of those beautiful and poignant words that God speaks to you, every one of you, in this moment. Lord, you have examined me, you know me, you studied my life to its depths. And there isn't a word on my tongue, Lord, that you don't already know completely. You surround me, front and back. You put your hand on me, Lord. And no matter where I go, you are there. God, even the darkness, even my darkness, is not dark to you. For you are the one who created my innermost parts. You knit me together while I was still in my mother's womb. So I praise you, God, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I praise you, for now I realize, now I accept that I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Those are the words that we hear from the psalmist in 139. Those are the things that we see when we read what God has written in a journal for us. Words that are God's way of repairing the cracks in our lives, just like a kintsugi artist. And the truth is, God is just like a kintsugi artist with each of us. If we look around us, we can find the gold that God is lacing into our broken places all the time. And if we can trust in God's loving hand, working the gold into the cracks and the faults and the broken pieces of our lives, then maybe we can learn to accept ourselves as well. It's taken me years to do that. Years to stop worrying about what others said about me. Years to accept myself. To know that what others think about me doesn't define who I am. Years working on my faults to be a better person, to put my life back together. Now, I definitely spent time learning to plan and organize. But the truth is, I knew how to do those things all along. I was pretty good at them. I wouldn't have been a successful band director if I wasn't good at planning and organizing. But I still worked on myself, and I grew and got more skilled in those areas. And you know what? Those former friends, they never saw it. They never acknowledged it. They never accepted it. Because other people don't always see how gifted and how beautiful you are. They always see, you know the people that I'm talking about. Those people who always see the negative, who always find fault because they don't have your best interests at heart, and because they refuse to see as God sees. There's people out there in this world like that. If you've never come and run across some, you will. I suspect you have. What you and I have to do, our job, is to see as God sees. To realize that we aren't perfect, but that we are perfectly loved. Our job is to accept ourselves, and to accept one another. Because you never know how what you say may impact someone in the same way that my former friends impacted me. What you say, like my old friends, could break someone. Or it could, like Joni in that journal, remind someone of how loved they are. So your job, my job, is to be about acceptance. To accept and even embrace the broken parts of our lives. To accept our brokenness, our cracks, and our faults, and to see with God's eyes the beauty that is laced between our brokenness. Your job and my job is to always remember, as Paul does in those verses of 2 Corinthians that I read as we began today, to see that God's grace is enough, that it's all that you really need. Paul says, "My strength comes into its own in my weakness. Once I heard that, I was glad to let it happen. I quit focusing on the handicap and I began appreciating the gift. It was a case of Christ's strength moving in on my weakness." Paul's telling us about Kintsugi before Kintsugi was invented. I don't know what year it was. I didn't get that deep into my research. Christ's strength moving in on my weakness. It's the very definition of Kintsugi. Christ is the gold that repairs the brokenness in our lives, making us God's beautiful work of art. And that is always the way God sees us. Always as His beautiful work of art. All we have to do is accept the way God sees us. You know, I wish I still had that green mug today. It would be the perfect Kintsugi piece of art. It took me time to see that. But God took that mug, broken because of my hurt, broken because of my faults, broken because of my pain. And God put that mug back together. Maybe not in reality. That mug is still in 1,000 pieces, probably in some landfill somewhere, because we thought it was useless. Today, that mug would be my prized heirloom if I still had it. Because God took it and in my life put all the pieces of that broken mug back together, laced it with gold. God's love works that way. God's love turns broken mugs into gold-laced masterpieces and teaches young, unorganized band directors to make beautiful music with their lives. May you see and accept and know that God today as well. Amen.